The Wisconsin Assembly approved bills yesterday that would overhaul the state's campaign finance laws and the Government Accountability Board, which oversees elections and ethics in Wisconsin. The Assembly approved these bills after adopting modifications the Senate made earlier this month.
Democrats argue this legislation would open the door for corruption and expand the influence of money in politics. Other critics say these bills break from Wisconsin's tradition of transparency in government.
But our next guest says these campaign finance bills are good for Wisconsin. Eric Wang joins us now. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Competitive Politics and a campaign finance attorney for Wiley Ryan. Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, in a recent opinion piece you wrote, Eric, you say we shouldn't fear campaign finance reform, and to not fear it, we need to understand how we got here. So how did we get here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the latest bill that the legislature passed, and the governor is presumed that he'll sign that bill, you know, I think it's a positive development for the state of Wisconsin. After the catastrophe we saw with the John Doe investigations that your listeners may have heard about, in which prosecutors went after 29 citizen groups under a theory that they just sort of made up, and which the Wisconsin Supreme Court said there was no basis in the law whatsoever for that investigation. And as a result of that, that seems to be the catalyst for the legislation that just passed, which really will rein in the ability of law enforcement officials and state officials to regulate political speech and to regulate citizens' First Amendment rights. And this legislation would impose, you know, bright line standards for when citizen speech can be regulated and when it's off limits to state regulators.
The theory you were talking about was centered around the idea of coordination between campaigns and outside advocacy groups. The prosecutors said it wasn't a made up interpretation, but an interpretation of a law that some people said vague. But it was kind of a common understanding for a while that there was a bright line. Candidates shouldn't coordinate with outside groups.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there was an understanding or not about that, but it's just not really a tenable position that the prosecutors took, given that, you know, whether it's in Wisconsin or in other states or at the federal level, I think there's an expectation or an understanding in the opposite direction that state legislators may talk to citizen advocacy groups about the issues they care about. For example, abortion rights groups will obviously want to talk to legislators who are sympathetic to their cause about that issue. Pro-life groups will want to talk to pro-life legislators. Gun control groups or pro-Second Amendment groups will naturally want to talk to legislators about their issues that they care about, and they're of course permitted to do so under the First Amendment. That's the very essence of democracy. And when state legislators and those interest groups want to coordinate with regards to public education campaigns or public awareness campaigns about those issues, they should, of course, be entitled to do so, and they are under the U.S. Constitution and the First Amendment. And so what, the theory that the prosecutors went after these groups in the John Doe investigation under was that, these groups were putting out public messages urging the public to support the budget reform bill that Governor Walker had proposed a few years ago. And that was the theory that the prosecutors went after them under, that, it was somehow prohibited for those groups to talk to agents of Governor Walker about supporting his legislative agenda.
So the new laws clarify what candidates' campaigns can do coordinating with issue groups versus actual express election advocacy. So as I understand it now, there is more of a bright line still between candidates and a group that runs ads mostly saying vote for or vote against candidate X. Do you think it's good to have that barrier in place still?
Yes, I mean, I think it's absolutely essential that there has to be a bright line separation, because otherwise, anytime a citizen or an advocacy group talks to an elected official or talks to somebody, a state policymaker, they're in danger of, potentially being subject to investigation and potentially having any of their speech-related activities in regards to those issues being the subject of regulation. And, they'll never, without that bright line, they'll never know whether or not their speech is going to be regulated or not. And as a result of that, it really creates a chilling effect where people just don't speak. They're forced into silence because of this sort of Damocles of the campaign finance law hanging over their heads.
Talking to attorney Eric Wang about campaign finance changes on their way, it looks like, to the governor's desk here in Wisconsin. He says they're good for Wisconsin, good for free speech in the state. So, Eric, where people worry is, it's not so much just talking to politicians, but running an ad before election time saying candidate X, is opposed to freedom or something like that. They're doing bad things. And then instead of ending vote for or against, they just say call and tell the candidate you don't like it. It seems like kind of splitting hairs to say that's not an election message to some people, to some critics of this change.
Well, I mean, I could see where they're coming from, but at the same time, it's really impossible to, legislate, that sort of distinction between issue advocacy and election advocacy. Many jurisdictions have tried writing statutes. Most of them have not been very satisfactory, whether from a practical standpoint or from a legal standpoint, and many of those laws have been struck down. And I could tell you as a practitioner, it's very difficult for us and for our clients to grapple with laws where they've tried to sort of erase the bright line distinction and try to regulate issue advocacy speech as election advocacy. As I said before, one point that I think is crucial is that, during the time of elections, that's the time when the public is tuning in most to what people are talking about with respect to elected officials. And so that's naturally the opportune time for when these issue groups also want to raise awareness about their legislative issues. So if you are, for example, a pro-abortion rights group or a pro-life group, or, pick any other type of issue that you're interested in, that's the election season is the time when you want to bring attention to those issues. And it's also the time, whether it's, the attention of the public or whether it's the attention of the elected officials that you want to, attract. And so it's natural that issue groups will want to speak out about politicians and their positions on the issues during elections. And to the extent that they're not trying to influence the elections, to the extent that they're trying to influence the public debate on their issues and to influence elected officials and elected officials' positions on those issues, they should be permitted to do so without being subject to the machinery of campaign finance laws.
Another issue that comes up and that may change here is disclosure of donations. So there's three different places somebody could give money to: a candidate directly, generally disclosed, an express group, the one that says vote for or vote against, that I think is still disclosed. Then the third one, the issue group, not disclosed. And people are worried that under this system, you can donate your money to that last group, the one that doesn't say vote for, doesn't have to disclose who donates. Then they can coordinate with the campaign and run lots of ads that name names of candidates, but just don't say vote for or against. Is this going to open the door to a lot of money and we don't know where it's coming from?
I don't think so. The problem with disclosure to the last group that you mentioned, the issue groups, is that the donors who give to those groups, a lot of those groups, can be quite controversial. If you're a pro-abortion rights group, you're there's still a lot of threats and violence directed at, you know, pro-choice groups and their supporters. 10, 15 years ago, if you had given to a group advocating for gay rights, it's very likely that you would have suffered repercussions if your identity became public. So, people who give to issue advocacy groups, it's not part of the bargain for them to have their names and identities disclosed if they want to support controversial issues. And, that's how, social change gets enacted in our country, is that, these groups are able to get the resources that they need to advocate for causes that, used to be considered controversial, for positions that used to be very socially unpopular. It's because of that anonymity that's been afforded to the donors of those groups that they've been able to, accomplish many of the things that they've been able to do over the past, few years, over the past decade.
Another concern that gets raised, Eric, is that, say, if I was running for office, your law firm donated to an issue group that said sympathetic things about me, didn't disclose that. I knew you made the donation. Is there a risk of corruption, or at least the appearance of corruption, that I might say, hey, yeah, I want to work for these guys when I'm in office?
Well, there are still bribery laws in place. And so if you have that sort of quid pro quo agreement that, this interest group or this entity or this contributor is making these contributions with the understanding that it's to help a specific candidate or elected official, and there is a understanding that candidate or elected official is going to take official action as a result of that transaction, that's prohibited under the bribery laws. That's a criminal offense, and that's a serious offense. And, I don't think that most candidates, elected officials, and, most of any of my clients would want to be involved in a transaction like that. So, I think there's sufficient, there are still sufficient safeguards in place to prevent that type of corruption.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Well, thank you.
That's Eric Wang. He's senior fellow at the Center for Competitive Politics and a campaign finance attorney for the firm Wiley Ryan, with us to make the case for campaign finance bills just passed in the assembly being good for Wisconsin.